Join us, everybody, as we sing happy birthday to Siyasanga Mlandu, who turns 37 today. Chisa! Chisa! Chisa!
To you! Happy happy to you! Happy happy to you!
Okay, let's play. Siyasanga Mlandu, happy birthday. Thank you so much for responding to our open invite for you at home. And yeah, it seems like you haven't left your car since 2013, given the sound that we got from that voice note. This song reminds me of 2006 in Quigney, East London, as a Fort Hare University student, when I used to visit a close friend overnight. And there's an ellipsis there. So go figure what that might mean for a university student who goes to visit a close friend by night for overnight. This is in the Quigney area. Now, if you know anything about East London and the word Quigney is mentioned, good luck. It's the Bromfontein equivalent. Hi, Ngaba. Benny McCarthy arrived when he was playing for Cape Town Spurs. He scored two beautiful goals against Chiefs at Ellis Park. Ajax Amsterdam didn't waste time. As for me, it was the time when I discovered Tracy Chapman's words in her music. Those words built the person I am. I am forever grateful. From Tau Sibata. There continue to be more contributions and I'm going to read them. The birth of my daughter, and for an hour listening to someone I mentored over 15 years ago, Thulani Madondo. This Colin Sitimela from Cape Town. Fantastic. Thank you so much for that contribution, Colin. Thulani has just left, and I'm hoping that he's in the car listening to that beautiful message that you have sent. Mpo in Cape Town says, Hi, Ngaba. It was getting my first job at the aquarium. I had applied to volunteer, but they hired me to work full-time. Fantastic stories coming through. Certainly do appreciate this. And Dr. Philemon Mahuma in Midstream here says this, Greetings, the song is on SAFM, Thulani and benefactors. Thanks for a motivational discussion. May the seed sown by you motivate us and many others. Best wishes, Dr. Phil. And we have our own better version of Dr. Phil, might I add. And that one is in Midstream. Peter in Cape Town, my first hole in one. Listen, that would be a memory that will for sure last forever. A bit about me, my first overseas trip, 2013. It's going to take time. Give me 2 minutes, please. Unemployed, 2013, it's around, sorry, it's actually 2012, I'm unemployed, finished my stint, finished my UIF money, I'm in Cape Town, fortunately living in my brother's house, and had nothing to do. I get a call on a particular Monday for a Tuesday, Songezo, are you free? I need an MC, I've got my friends from Slovenia who are here to sell their business school, I need an MC, please, you can't say no, I've got nothing better to do, so I go, and that's the thing about honoring an invitation, just honor the invitation. I showed up, it was at the V&A waterfront at the Nedbank building, if I'm not mistaken, there at the V&A waterfront. And I did this thing. It's Danica Purg and Arnold Valravens, a Slovene and a Dutch couple, respectively, who were there to sell their business school, the IEDC Bled School of Management. And in the audience were scholars, professors, you name, who typically would be in the audience of a business school that's trying to sell its programs. And I was there and I did what I could, and that was to just be a good MC. Later that day, the owner of the school, Professor Danica Purg, comes up to me and says, what a fantastic job. In all the years I've seen people in and on stage in communications, no one has quite done it like you. I'd love to offer you a position at our school if you will accept my offer. Of course, I said I'd love to, but I absolutely haven't the means to do so, so perhaps I'll try and raise the funds. And I did. She told me there and then, we'll make up a plan. The following year, beginning of 2013, a plan was made. They gave me like a ridiculous rebate from the school fee, so all I needed to do was get myself there. And fortunately, again, earlier in that year, I happened to be at an event at which, among other people, the guy who owns Jacob's Coffee was at. And I took a chance. I wrote to him through a friend. And that friend got to him, and the guy deposited into my personal account 35,000 rand in cash for me to fly myself to Slovenia via Zurich, Switzerland, and stay there for the time and cover my visa and related admin costs of going to school in Slovenia. It was my first international flight. It was my first everything there. to cut a long story short, 3 years later, I completed the program. It was a distance learning thing and needed more money, and I was able to raise money later in 2016. Graduated, first honors. And in 2018, March of that year, the school, that is, saw fit to honor me with the Alumni Achievement Award. At the time, I couldn't go in person and collect this award because I was in the U.S. reading towards my master's in government procurement law at George Washington University. At the time as well, I was a Justice Thomas Bergenthal scholar, full 100% scholarship to study in Washington. And so when I reflect on my life, I'm like, some of the things that I would want to happen now are not happening, certainly not happening the way that I would want to. But I know there is glory out there in the world because I've experienced that glory in the world. It may happen again, and it will happen again, not just for me, but for you as well. So thank you for inviting, rather thank you for indulging this invitation, because these are the kinds of stories that really give us strength. And best believe, if I can do it, you too can. There is enough sunshine to dry your clothes, for a goldfish has no hiding place. And talking about goldfish, Dr. Wilhelm Lichtenberg, after the break, is one such goldfish. Together we are going to celebrate here on SAFM Viewpoint.
Here, there, and everywhere. SAFM 104.3 FM in Rustenburg. Songe Somapete on SAFM.
The work of Young Hearts Africa, established in 2021, has to date provided life-saving surgery for 30 children with congenital heart diseases in partnership with the Red Cross Children's Hospital in Cape Town. Over 4,000 of the 13,000 children born in South Africa with CHD need surgery in order to survive, but less than 800 of these operations actually take place in the public sector, given the dire lack of facilities and specialists, combined with enormous costs involved. The foundation works tirelessly to highlight the plight of these children and to raise funds and to enable more life-saving surgeries to take place. Dr. Wilhelm Lichtenberg recently won a Thoracic Surgery Foundation Every Heartbeat Matters, EHM that is, award. This award recognizes the work done by those who conduct humanitarian surgical outreach work in underserviced regions with indigent populations around the world. Of the 14 global awards given, Dr. Lichtenberg is the only African recipient. He is on air right now, and shall we all say hallelujah to him for being a fantastic inspiration beyond that, and which is more, a wonderful human being. Dr. Wilhelm Lichtenberg, welcome to SFM, and many congratulations, sir.
Thank you very much, Sambiezi, but I'm not sure who you're talking about right now.
I'm talking about you. Best believe you must own that. You must own that, and that's
no,
the
no,
thing.
No, no, no.
Please.
No, no, no. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I really appreciate that, but there is no way that I can comfortably sit with all that adulation. This is a team effort, absolutely a team effort, thanks to the people who helped me run this foundation. And this is very much their award and the award of the children that we've managed to help and their families. So I'd very much like to change tack here and rather talk about the foundation and the work we do, not about myself.
I'll indulge that, because I think you are right. Whenever there's a victory, there are so many heads and contributions and successes that lead up to the main and the adulated success that are oftentimes not seen, oftentimes never even spoken about. So it is very gracious and kind of you to acknowledge the efforts of the people that make you who you are, or who make the award what it is. So do share some insights about the Young Hearts Africa Foundation that has done such incredible work, particularly for those who could never, not least financially, repay them at the time at which the service is offered.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, and good evening to your listeners. I think I'm going to try and give you a pre-seed version of how it came about. When I was a junior trainee surgeon and back in the early 2000s, I had to one evening break the news of a child's demise to her mother. And that left an indelible memory. And I realized that we needed to do something more to try and get the system to function better. And this idea slumbered and germinated for many years, and eventually when the opportunity presented itself, I got together with some like-minded individuals and we started Young Hearts Africa. And I don't perform the surgery myself because there's only 24 hours in it. There are only 24 hours in the day. I'm the ideas man, and I do all the cajoling behind the scenes to try and get the money and to try and make it possible for people in an established infrastructure to do this. But as I say, it's a concerted effort with many cogs in the chain to eventually get these children to be helped. And the this award was time, yes. It was a huge honor and was a privilege to be able to attend the summit in California recently. But the best part of it is that it comes with a nice cash component, which we can put towards the surgical program which we have running, and try and gain some more impetus and momentum and try and expand this to other centers as well.
Tell us more specifically about being only established in 2021 and already attracting the kind of global adulation as you have through this award. And I would imagine you don't do it for awards, but awards do matter. They help elevate the profile. They help people remain motivated, or motivates those perhaps who were not as motivated. And the cash component to which you make reference to can only allow you to do more of this work, which is largely intervention by the kinds of programs that unfortunately are not available in the public sector, which are all too critically needed. So 2021, 3 years on, already here we are. This is big. But the founding of this foundation, Young Arts Africa, what would have agitated for it?
Well, as I say, it was an idea or a realization which was 20 years in the making. And the other nice thing about the award is, if people don't know there's a problem, well, then they can't get stuck in and try and work towards finding a solution. So this certainly helps the advocacy part of our program to make people aware of the fact that heart disease, it claims the third most lives in South Africa, certainly worldwide too, but it especially congenital and rheumatic heart valve disease in sub-Saharan Africa is a major problem. If I tell you that heart disease claims more lives than the six most common forms of cancer combined, the need is, and it's not just the burden of disease of heart, structural heart disease. It's the dire shortage of facilities, of capacity, of trained expertise, which we are trying to address all under the same hat. The one hand washes the other. If we can capacitate the systems in place to perform more surgery, then we have material to train more surgeons, anaesthetists, critical care staff, nursing staff, technicians, and that's all going to have to be put in place if we want to create a long-term solution to address this problem. So that's what's really exciting me about the fact that we can facilitate this and try and build a legacy to ensure the longevity of a program like this.
Let's have a conversation about the actual clinical stuff and the condition, because I think you do raise important points when, if we are not as aware, we can't act as appropriately as we would if we were aware. Talk to us first, please. Just give us a short scientific explanation of what exactly the condition is that's congenital heart disease. Is it hereditary? Is it lifestyle? Is it just pure bad luck, or just a gene component gone wrong? In other words, if I'm just interested in what CHD is, help me understand that as a non-practitioner.
It's probably time is a little limited, but I'm going to try and just package it for you.
Sure.
So congenital heart disease is one of the most common forms of deficiencies, congenital deficiencies that we encounter worldwide. But in sub-Saharan Africa, the incidence is higher, and it is largely attributed to the poor quality of maternal health during pregnancy. So if the mother has an unhealthy pregnancy, the chances of congenital deformities in the fetus and the baby who is eventually born are higher. So the poverty, the socioeconomic circumstances certainly contribute to that. And then there's a whole range of defects. If one goes and looks at the embryology of how the heart develops, there's a myriad potential defects, some obviously more common than others. But about a third of congenital heart defects, and if we look at, I think you mentioned earlier, we've got about between 13 and 15,000 children born with congenital defects, and about a third of those require surgery. And those who can be remedied surgically can go on and lead a completely normal life. And that's the impact of it. Not that I'm taking away from any of the other great projects, but if you feed a child, you feed them for one day. If you correct their congenital defect, you offer them a chance at a completely normal life. And there's not even it's not that it's a competition. It's just the impact that one can make by addressing something like that. Now, you mentioned the figures earlier in your introduction as to how dire the need is. But it's not just congenital heart disease that we're facing. It's rheumatic heart valve disease, which is also a socioeconomic thing. Rheumatic heart valve disease is virtually non-existent in the first world, whereas it's a massive burden of disease in sub-Saharan Africa and South America and in parts of Asia.
This
So
is
we
where
really are facing nothing short of an incipient humanitarian disaster by not addressing this.
Sorry to have cut you, but this is exactly where now we start having a conversation about social determinants of health and some of the health problems or some of the health questions that need to be addressed at the point they need to be addressed by health practitioners do not first present there for the first time or do not present as health or are not as a consequence of health issues, but rather of the social issues. I mean, when you talk about, and I think the name is rheumatic heart disease, the one that is virtually non-existent in the first world, but a major problem in the developing world is precisely because of the socio-economic issues that pertain, that then as they become more pronounced, they manifest in other spaces. In this instance, we're talking about social determinants of health. They present clinically, but really it is an intervention that needed social development or education or whatever the necessary public good would have been at the time, but did not come and now presents as a health issue. Do we make sufficient allowance for that in South Africa's public healthcare system, particularly in relation to the advocacy programs that we could better roll out to ensure that we have less of the things that present at health taken care of at a social level?
Okay, I think we digress somewhat from what my mandate is to talk about, and that is the surgical correction of heart disease. First of all, I'm not a public health and a community health specialist, and the topics that you've just covered, though very salient and obviously applicable, are not within my field of expertise and not the kind of thing that our organization is equipped or mandated to address. I think that's a discussion for a completely different debate. Fascinating debate, and I'd love to engage in it in a different forum. But at the moment, I think if you don't mind, we should maybe just rather concentrate on the surgically remediable disease. Also keeping in mind that the definitive management of structural heart disease caused by rheumatic fever is in fact surgery. Yes, it should be addressed preventing it, and there certainly are big projects on the ground all over Africa to address rheumatic heart disease in its inf or rheumatic fever in its infancy to prevent the consequences of rheumatic heart disease. But that, I think, is, as I said, a debate for a different forum, and not one I, as a surgeon, can sufficiently address because I'm not equipped with the facts for a debate such as that. I would defer to public health practitioners
I've
and
got you now.
cardiologists and infectious disease specialists.
No, it's my job to push, and thank you for that response. I mean, I think it's a fair response from your end as well.
You do so well.
Well, others don't obviously catch on to it until it's too late, and then they've got themselves in knots. But anyway, I wasn't trying to do that. Let's talk then to the skills required, the kinds of skills that you have. Now, South Africa has so many doctors who are not employed. Is there a way then perhaps the foundation could perhaps participate in programs with the academic hospitals, for instance, at UCT, there is one there, together in attending to the backlog? So, in other words, using the skills that are available, using the academic hospital from a skills development or from a skills transfer, including the work that your foundation does to meet some of these backlogs in healthcare, not least of which these heart-related diseases. Is there something that can be said about that? Is there scope for something like this, if not immediately down the road?
Well, that is exactly one of the two pillars which we are driving towards now and relentlessly. So, because there is such a dire shortage of skills, and specifically pediatric cardiothoracic surgery is a super specialized field which requires many, many years of intensive specialist training. And we have a dire shortage of pediatric cardiothoracic surgeons in the country. So by implementing this program and creating a larger program with the material which one needs to train these specialists is exactly what we're driving for. Like I said to you earlier, the one hand washes the other. Mm-hmm. If we have the opportunity to operate more children, then we create the opportunity to train more people. And then we hope the ripple effect and the snowball of that will eventually, over years, create a much bigger and a much more robust infrastructure. As far as unemployed practitioners in South Africa are concerned, this the other part of your question, that relates back again to healthcare at the primary prevention level, which is not where our foundation is involved. Obviously, we'd like to become, but we are a very fledgling, very small organization in our infancy. And at the moment, we need to play to our strengths and concentrate on that.
Let's talk finally about what lies ahead. The things that you're looking forward to the most, given the fact that it's 3 years on now, you've won this major award, which is not yours, but that of the foundation itself. The programs that you might be perhaps looking to roll out and how you could become a more serious, and I'm not suggesting right now you are not, but just share with us your vision from those who are interested as potential stakeholders, how they can get involved, or what are some of the things now that you're allowed to do, given the fact that you've got a better understanding of the landscape in the country, not just as a practitioner, but through the work of the foundation, and some of the things that you are realizing are a little bit more available now than perhaps you might have thought at the start of it. Final question.
That's quite a wide question with many parts to it. As far as my vision is concerned, I would like to make a contribution to getting the critical mass of surgery that needs to be done to bring our training centers back into alignment with the major training centers in the rest of the world. And it's a volumes game. It's a numbers game. Mm-hmm. So we need to capacitate that, and for that we need cold hard cash, which is what we are negotiating with major funders with now. As far as listeners getting involved, that's a question I'm regularly asked. I always say every little drop helps fill the bucket, whether it's 10 rand, 100 rand, or whatever it is. When we can put all of that together and we get enough individuals involved, we can do an additional operation, and one additional operation can change the lives of not only the patient, but their family and their community. And my vision is to put South Africa back on the map as center of excellence as it was in the past for the reasons that we're historically all very much aware of. As far as the immediate future is concerned, I said to you, I want to try and help with my team create training programs to train our own people. And we're already in negotiation with other centers in sub-Saharan Africa who have similar ideas. And we are working together to try and cross-pollinate and feed off one another's strengths and try and augment one another's weaknesses so that we can create a concerted effort to try and tackle this program on many various different fronts. Because a team is, you know, there's no I in team. So this is all it's all about pooling resources and making a difference on as wide a front as we can.
Let's appreciate the great work of Dr. Wilhelm Lichtenberg, cardiothoracic surgeon at founder of Young Hearts Foundation. In short, he's a doctor from Cape Town who specializes in hearts. Where have I heard that before, taking on the global stage as well? Many congratulations to the Young Heart Africa, as well as to Dr. Willem Lichtenberg. And you certainly have our very best wishes as you roll out the great work that is much needed in the country. 21:43, everybody, a conversation with you at home. No guest is coming for this conversation now. It's you at home. And the question is, death penalty, yay or nay? Let's take calls, and let's take calls right through. 086-000-2032. Have you had somebody in your family murdered? How would you get over that? Is the death penalty a way around it? Or, and this is going back in time now, do you have a relative who was executed through the death penalty? Or one who might have been on death row in the mid-90s, and thank goodness to the intervention of the Constitutional Court in the S versus Makwanyane matter that effectively put an end to the death penalty. All in all, this is also true. South Africans are under siege. Crime in this country is at levels at which nobody, using any metric, can be satisfied with. The question is, how should it be addressed? Is it going to be the death penalty or not? Your contributions until the top of the hour, starting from after the break. And with that, we'll be using some of the contributions to the same question yesterday to kickstart things.